Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and we're here to continue our expectations series today, talking about two players, Jake Hummel, the inside linebacker brought in to play special teams, and Zay Flowers, wide receiver, of course. Doing that with me is Jordan Coe. Jordan, how you doing?
Good, Ken. It's good to see you, man.
Hey, good to see you too, buddy. It's been a long time, way too long. During the offseason, we normally have three or four shows we do at various times, sometimes on the draft. You didn't do a draft show this year, which was kind of a bummer. But we'll talk today about Jake Hummel and Zay Flowers. So let's start with the undercard. I think we can all agree that's Jake Hummel, who's entering his fourth season. He just played for the Rams last year. I'm not sure, actually, and I don't know if you've heard what his contract situation might have been, because it seems like the Rams could have tendered him. And if so, he could have been given a contract that way. But I guess they would have had to pay something more than the minimum to do so. And the Ravens ended up signing him for approximately the minimum with some guaranteed money.
Yeah, it's always interesting with that, you know, when you see those opportunities to tender, but they don't happen. But I think it is really just saving around the margins. The Rams also have, you know, being out here in LA, they've increased their depth pretty significantly here over the last few years. So, like, made a lot more draft picks and kept a lot of those guys on the team. So I do wonder if some of this was just a depth issue for them overall. But I don't know. I picked this pairing because I wanted to talk about Jake Hummel a little bit in particular. Maybe a little bit less to do with Jake and more to do with who he's replacing how that has me excited. But I think it's a really interesting signing for the very classic Raven signing, right? Mm-hmm. Standard special teams player, you know, you kind of know what you're going to be getting, what you're going to get from him. And the Ravens really have had kind of like two variations of these types of players, the guys that are almost strictly special teams, but they have seen some of these guys come in and take on a little bit more of that backup role and see it grow over time. And so, you know, Hummel had to be considering that as an opportunity with this defense, I think, when taking a look at where to sign.
I think that's the modern, what I call the modern Ravens versions. They did have some special teams only players if you go back to the turn of the century and stuff. But I think since they've, you know, Albert McClellan, Gary Stills played some defense, Anthony Levine, you know, Nakamura, players like that, they're all multi-talented. And that's what I like about Hummel, is that he's a guy I think could probably help you as a linebacker if you need to put him in there. And he can definitely help you on special teams, where he's one of the better players in the league, I think, in terms of what he provides you there. But the Ravens really, the roster is too deep to be able, and not only is it too deep, it's too project-oriented right now. You know, with Carson Vincent taking up a roster spot, for example, they don't have the kind of room they've had in the past to have guys who only play special teams. You can afford to have those guys on the practice squad and elevate them and then discard them as you see fit, but you can't afford to have them on the roster, not really. And they need to have guys who are a dual purpose, a defensive player and a special teams player, or maybe a wide receiver and a special teams player.
And it does feel like they have fewer of the guys that can also play special teams than it seems like they've had historically. So this was this was in that sense a somewhat predictable signing. The Ravens were very much going to add a guy like this. And then obviously with the departure of Harrison in particular, I think that's the area that, once Harrison decided to take the $5 million from the Steelers and go, and I'm very interested to see what the inside linebacker play of the Steelers is going to look like next year. Good luck to you guys over there. Have a lot of fun. Should be a lot of fun to watch. In particular, you know, the Ravens needed someone like this. Welsh seemed like he was not kind of, it wasn't cutting it from what the Ravens were looking for out of him. So I think that from the quality of what we've seen from Hummel, this is a really solid signing for the Ravens.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that it is a good one. One of the things I look at is on special teams is kind of that tackles to missed tackle ratio, or just the missed tackle rate, if you want to call it that. He missed 3 tackles, made 8, and all of them were solos. So it wasn't a case of, you know, he was just assisting the second man to the ball and whatnot. These are the real thing. He played across 5 units. He played on a field goal block unit, which doesn't have any tackling responsibilities, of course, not any real ones anyway. And then he played 2 return units, which have presumably no tackling responsibilities unless you get a fumble. And then he played on 2 coverage units which certainly have tackling responsibilities, made 8 tackles there. You have a lot more misses on special teams, much higher missed tackle rate. And I'm looking at the Ravens last year, for example. They missed, looks like, 23 out of 83 tackles. And my guess is that's among the better totals in the league. So that's a 28% missed tackle rate. So the fact that he missed, you know, 27% or something, 27.3, I guess it would be, is not bad at all. In terms of a rate, as a high number of tackles, only Chris Board had more tackles than Hummel had last year among the Ravens special teams players.
Those are tough tackles to make, like you were saying. That you're usually in a one-on-one situation. It's a little less so, I think, now with the kickoff rules changing, where it's from a tackling perspective a little less potentially dynamic for the gunners that are running down the field. But those can be. Those are tough tackles to make, and usually wiggly guys for sure that are in those roles, like elite tackle missers, you know, not necessarily breakers, but guys that are trying to make you miss pretty specifically. You know, it's interesting because Tylan Wallace is kind of the opposite of that. Whenever he's in the return role, it's not the wiggle, but it's really the broken tackles. If you know, in the Rams game when he ran that one back, it was more broken tackle than missed tackle. So I would be interested to see a little bit more breakdown on the 3 misses and kind of where those came from. But like you said, you can't be unhappy with that kind of ratio from a player.
Yeah, that would be the kind of thing to be good to go back and look at. I'm very frustrated by this in terms of the draft. I want somebody to basically aggregate the drops that receivers have, for example, or aggregate dropped interceptions or aggregate blown coverages for cornerbacks. But nobody's doing that. And that means, you know, the finding those plays is very hard. And so what I end up doing is look at the, you know, the 3 or 4 longest plays a cornerback gives up, and you have to go in there and you have to look at the coverage from PFF, and they have it. I mean, you could find, you know, there was a 47-yard play in this game. Then you have to go to the ESPN play by play, pick out that play in the game, go to the actual video from it. And then it's not too hard to find, but it's a little bit of a pain in the ass on a per play basis to go find those things. I wish there was some way that it could be more aggregated and sorted in a way that'd be easier. And it's probably coming. We just don't have it yet. But anyway, it's a fun thing. Of course, he's acquired to play that lead special teams role. Board is gone. He had the C-patch last year. Would you guess that made famous by the C-patch block that Harbaugh claimed was made on some previous block in the back? I think it was on the Tylan Wallace touchdown, wasn't it?
I think it was. Block.
Yeah. Do you see Jake Hummel getting the captain's role with the Ravens on special teams, or is there another player that you would pick for that?
That's a great question. I mean, it feels like Jordan South's got to be the leader in the clubhouse there, or the long snapper, but Nick, you know, Moore, with, yeah. with Yeah, with the lead guy, I mean, maybe Justice Hill could be a guy, you know, who's all consistently a quality gunner that we're always getting. You know, I am excited about the opportunity of seeing more of Keaton Mitchell, keeping Justice Hill fresh for a whole boatload of reasons. But I think special teams is included in that list of them. So maybe him. But I mean, with Tucker now gone and a lot of the main special teamers, so like with Harrison, also gone, you know, it is, there aren't many guys, it'll be a new unit altogether. And I find that to be really interesting, especially with the new kickoff. It just seems like there wasn't as, at least in Ravens games, it certainly wasn't more dynamic. And the Ravens were very willing to just kick it out of the back of the end zone, not take the risk, take the ball where it was going to be. And that's just like an interesting evolution for Ravens football of let's not take these risks in these situations. And it'll be interesting to see if they consistently stay with that. And if the legs of the new kicker, whoever that might end up being, if it's Loop or whoever, I can't remember the undrafted guy they brought in.
Hoyland.
Yeah. Whoever it ends up being, you know, whether or not he has the leg to be able to consistently kick it out of the end zone and stay fresh in a way that Tucker was.
Yeah. So the new rules with the 35-yard line touchback are going to force a lot more returns. And that's, I think, it should be much less kicking in the end zone, because I think part of what the Ravens are doing here is something I've talked about on air for a number of years, is that you're better off taking a small loss on a play when you're overwhelmingly the better team in other aspects. And usually reduced variance is what you want when you have the lead, or when you should have the lead for the rest of the game. And the Ravens were perfectly happy to give the ball at the 30. There's also, I think, I don't know how much they consider this in the thing, but I think the reduced injury risk is a very significant consideration for that. I think it should be. And it may be that the 35-yard line, they're still willing to give it up in certain game situations. So if you're up three touchdowns, go ahead, kick into the end zone, let them have the ball at the 35-yard line. If you're, three touchdowns in the fourth quarter, not three touchdowns in the second quarter. But I think in general, that penalty is so close now to an out-of-bounds kick that it's going to force a lot more kick returns.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, in the sense that there's not nearly as much risk of kicking it, trying to kick it to the corner. Like, it's one thing to kick it all the way to the back of the zone, have them like try and like land it on at the one, right? But like those corner death kicks that kind of stop right there in the corner, and if it rolls out of bounds and you're willing to take the chance on that, again, you've got a little bit more, in some senses, there's more variance, but on well-kicked balls in that location, it's going to put returners potentially in a tough bind. And I like the rule change, and I think it'll be, I think it'll be interesting. I think I feel like kickoffs, and again, this is from watching most of the football I watch is the Ravens, right? I felt like the kickoffs from a special teams perspective were not all that exciting over I can't really remember more than a couple of plays that were memorable on either side of the ball on the kickoff for the Ravens, which I thought was kind of peculiar. I thought the Ravens were going to be more creative on their special team returns and do some fun things. So again, positive on the Keaton Mitchell reports out of OTAs of what he might be able to bring there as well.
Yeah. So he looked okay on returns last year. He had a couple of good returns late in the year when he was back, and Ali had a couple of returns when he had some chances. A lot of it was still Justice Hill. And I think, you know, you usually split the field, so you're giving the kicking team usually the option to kick to one guy or the other. It may be where they want to line up their player. One of the like precepts of special teams is that the kicking team usually has one overwhelmingly good coverage guy, and they move him around. And therefore, the other team can't easily game plan for him if they don't know where he's going to be. So they whether it's, you know, it might be an L1 on one kick and R3 on the next, and you don't know every time where he's going to be. I think that would have been Chris Board last year for the Ravens. All right, let's talk about Jake Hummel. What's a good season look like for you, for Jake Hummel?
Yeah, I mean, I think a good season is filling in across the board in all those special team spots, being there kind of consistently all year long. Obviously, health being kind of a bare minimum for a quality season, and seeing something in that kind of five to eight range in terms of tackles from a special teams player. I don't think there's any reason why we wouldn't expect that. I think anything below that would honestly be a bad season. It's almost one of those ones where there's no there's no middle ground here for Hummel. It's either you had a good season or you had a bad season. And some of that is just the nature of special teams play and how isolated the opportunities, like you were saying earlier, are to actually make tackles.
Yeah, there will be more tackles made this year. I want to say there was only like 22 punts returned the whole year against the Ravens too. So it wasn't like there were a lot of anything. That may have that wrong. It might have been 22 down or something. I'd have to, before I perjure myself, let me just say I don't remember exactly. Here's a good season for me. And I think this is maybe one of the big things for Hummel, because I think he's one of the only Ravens who provides this, is that he accepts a handshake agreement to extend the roster. So they have the two roster extension positions now that I believe they've continued with. Certainly is in the 24 rule book. I didn't see anything about it being rescinded, so I assume it's still part of the NFL rules this year. And that means you can easily go to 55, but a lot of teams, they understand the value of going even further than that. And the Ravens certainly are one of those teams. I'm not saying the marginal value of spot 56 is nearly as much as 54 or 55 is, but it's worth something. And a player like Hummel, who has $100,000 in guaranteed money, that's kind of your total risk of you cutting him and bringing him back. And you give him, you probably actually have to give him another $25,000 worth of guaranteed money. There's to be the possibility another team could buy him away from you, I guess. I wouldn't really put a lot of stake in that. Usually, if you make a handshake agreement and you screw the Baltimore Ravens, you've screwed yourself with with an organization you don't want to mess with. I think they'll tell everybody exactly what you did, and I don't think it would come across well for you. I think they were unhappy with the Ben Mason situation for exactly that reason. They just accepted a different practice squad assignment. Besides that, activated every week, he's healthy, plays 15 plus games, contributes to 4 or 5 special teams units. Not sure if he'll be on field goal block with the Ravens. It's possible. He helps fill the 800 special team snaps lost with the departures of the inside linebackers, Board, Harrison, and Welch. And he remains the fourth inside linebacker and sees minimal, if any, time on defense. The Ravens are happy with the arrangement with special team success and offer him another year at the vet minimum or slightly above. Could be vet minimum with a little bit of guaranteed money. Could be slightly above. Could be either of those. Does not qualify for the 4-year veteran bonus monies, which is unfortunate. So Ravens don't have any easy way to keep him around without a multi-year deal or giving him additional guaranteed money.
Yeah, we get into this interesting good and great seasons for Hummel versus for the Ravens, right? You know, this whole idea that like hopefully he doesn't see any time on special teams, and that's a great season in my book, you know. And again, no knock on Hummel and what he can or potentially will contribute to the team.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. Go ahead with your great.
Yeah, I mean, I think a great season, if we're looking at Hummel in particular, is that he has that opportunity to be kind of the third inside linebacker, that he shows something in camp and there's more to his play on actual defense, right? I think that there's very little margin to elevate to a great season as a special teamer. You know, I think if we were looking at something that was in the 12 plus tackle range, that would be a great season for Hummel. I just think that is just really potentially, like you mentioned, with more kickoffs, a bit more realistic, but I think it's just really unlikely to be something that we're going to see have happen. So in order for him to stretch that to a great season, he's going to have to get a role on the defense. It's going to have to mean that somebody else misstepped or there was some kind of injury. And he was ready, available, stepped up, and was capable of filling in.
It would really take two injuries, and I'm in the same place as you. I'll just read my great season, then we'll talk about the injuries for a second. So I'd say for a great season, he's healthy, plays 16 or 17 games plus any playoff action. So he basically misses no time, stands out on special teams, and earns a leadership role, maybe a captain's patch, plays 50 to 150 snaps as a backup inside linebacker as needed. Same thing. This would be very bad for the Ravens. Meets the standard for a Ravens combination special teams and defensive player. And the Ravens offer him a multi-year deal with some bonus dollars. The other way he could reach that is if his practice looks just fine. And they think, yep, this is a guy who could step in if he needs to. And the Ravens have access to that. And the Ravens are signaling that with a multi-year deal where they like him, his captaincy of the special teams unit or leadership of the special teams unit, we'll call it that. and they are willing to reward that with some bonus dollars, also probably indicating that they think he can fill in as a backup inside linebacker, because you can get other replacement guys for special teams only.
Yeah, I think, you know, Hummel, we know what we should be getting from him. And I think, like you mentioned, in terms of if he is seeing the field, ideally that's only happening because he showed something phenomenal in camp when given the opportunity. Uh-huh. I agree with you that there are a number of guys that he has to leave. I think it's more than two, potentially, even with injuries, of who it could end up being at the inside linebacker position.
Meaning some like, John Street guy that might be coming in after if Buchanan
I also like the undrafted guy from
Memphis. Yeah.
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 So I think, you know, Hummel is, for a guy that was non-tendered by another team, that tells you pretty much, I think the book is written on his ability as a drop defender, as an inside linebacker. And so ultimately, if it's injuries that end up being the reason, or even if it's underperformance and it leads to cuts, I just think the Ravens are going to turn to other spots and other positions. And it's pretty unlikely that even Hummel is going to get those opportunities.
Right. Okay. So there are actually two guys. So you like Chandler Martin from Memphis is good, but Jay Higgins from Iowa, who you might have been the guy you meant for all that.
That was the guy that I was thinking of. I couldn't remember if it was Iowa or Iowa State. And then when you said Memphis, I was like, I must be thinking of the wrong place.
Well, that's okay. There's two of them, and they'll probably be both on the practice squad, I would think. That it's a good opportunity for them both to be there. And they're the kind of guys you can elevate for special teams three times. If you need them on the roster after that, you elevate them at that point. Real quick, my order of operations, if in terms of injuries, if there's an injury at the mic, I think Buchanan moves to the mic and takes over that role. I think he's the bigger body over Simpson. Although I got to say, Simpson looks freaking enormous. I've seen him the other day and his guns are twice what I recall in terms of being a big, monstrous linebacker presence there. Much different. I mean, the guys obviously put on weight. A lot of the Ravens have, by the way. Dafe always put on 20 pounds. It is one of those things that, you know, every report in preseason is great. Hopefully it doesn't lead to injuries of any sort for these two players. Yeah. But if Roquan were to go down, I think Buchanan would still be the guy I would guess would be the mic, because he's got that more balanced set of skills. Simpson, I think, would be the Will linebacker. He could move to Mike on third down if Smith were lost, Roquan were lost. But I think that then you'd have a dime back in there also. But I think if you lose the Will spot, then I think that Buchanan takes over there as well. So with being Smith and Buchanan, and then we'd have to see after that. If you have two of those guys injured, whether it's, you know, whatever, pick your combination, the Ravens are in a lot of trouble. They might go to the street. They might like one of the guys, either Martin or Higgins, if they're still around, to stick in there either at the Mike or Will spot.
Yeah, exactly. I think that there's a lot of variation and flexibility there. I mean, it's great to hear that Simpson looks better. Hopefully, you know, I think that his unlikeliness to move to the Mike is also because of whatever perceived struggles you might have over his ability to grasp the playbook coming into last year as well. It is strikingly unfathomable that it wasn't anything more than that for the issues that Simpson was having, because there weren't things to the naked eye that we were seeing from Simpson that led to such a drastic benching for him. I think that you had to be more in the know about what some of those things were happening. I think those are the inner workings of playbooks that are just, even for people that are sophisticated football followers, are beyond what we're able to perceive without knowing what a call is before any of those things happen. So you just have to believe it's tied to that.
I mean, I think you're right on that. I mean, Crawford has made the judgment. He thinks it might be processing, but what it might be processing the playbook, it might be processing what the offense is really trying to do. But it does not take too many times of being in the wrong position, either in a game or in practice, to be unhappy with an inside linebacker and want to make changes. And the Ravens very quickly took him out of the base package, went to the dime. Then they took him off the field and had this rotational scheme after Hamilton had to be yanked out of the dime to play the back end. And so they're fighting over these remaining snaps, and all of them are going to Harrison or Board, with Simpson in just in a couple of blowouts at the end of the year. I mean, that's a that is a very, very drastic benching, as you mentioned. All right, how about we move on and talk some Zay Flowers?
Yeah.
Probably a better topic for us. Entering his third season at 25, still the suddenness as an athlete, that great gift. And, you know, when I think of Zay Flowers, the thing that separates him from a T. Higgins, for example, and not that T. Higgins isn't great and can't use his body in ways that Zay Flowers can't do, but Higgins has to sit in the chair to decelerate. He has to show that to the cornerback opposite him, who can then make his move based on what Higgins is doing. Zay Flowers does not need to do that. At his weight, he can stick his foot in the ground and go, and he is deadly crossing the football field with a panting defensive back trying to trail him.
It was great to hear in his first rookie camp, you know, oh, joystick, you know, what are all these things that we heard about him, and he's lived up to all of it. And I think impressively kept a lot of durability for a player like that and at his size in the NFL. He is very Lamar-like in the sense that he's not taking a lot of big hits. He uses that deceleration to be able to wind down, to be able to get out of the way, to not take a lot of big hits in big moments when you think that he might. And I think that's going to be the make or break, I think, of Zay Flowers' long term of his career. Can he always be this quick twitch and avoid those hits and stay healthy and stay durable enough to be on the field for 15 plus games a season?
Yeah, that is a very legitimate question. Obviously, he missed the two most important games of the season last year, and it really should have hurt the Ravens, but it didn't. It didn't because they pounded the crap out of the Steelers on the ground in the playoffs, and they did whatever they wanted to Buffalo except for the three turnovers in the second game. They didn't punt that entire game. They moved the ball up and down the field at will pretty much on Buffalo. They gave the ball up on turnovers. So it wasn't anything that – I don't think it was anything where Zay Flowers would have been a difference maker if you had him on the field. I think they had the open targets they wanted in that game.
Yeah, the number of weapons that the Ravens are going to have heading into this upcoming year is staggering. And, you know, it's not like Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, right? Like in that sense, like one could argue that Derrick Henry brings that dynamic to the playmakers, the non-quarterback playmakers ability in a unique way that the Ravens haven't had in a long time. But you don't have these like fundamentally game-changing game breakers that some offenses have, right? Like the Tyreek Hills, like the Jamar Chases, these guys that honestly, you could stick them into any offense, make them the X or make them the lead receiver in whatever way you wanted to do it. And they were going to put up big numbers and perform. And that's what makes it interesting to try and evaluate Flowers is that, you know, when you look back at those games in the playoffs, it wasn't the issue. It was a miscommunication on the overthrow with Bateman on the first turnover. And then it was just Mark Andrews. Yeah, I don't want to talk about that. So
and bad snap from Lindelbaum causing the fumble.
Yeah, and so it was the Ravens classic, like deciding that this is a game that they're going to beat themselves, and they did it. But thinking about how many weapons that they have to be able to do that with Keaton Mitchell being able to come back for that, you know, actually seeing potential growth down the depth chart in the wide receiver room, you know, with Tez being an opportunity, this will be the first time I feel like the Ravens have had a second or third year wide receiver that feels like, oh, okay, this guy might have an opportunity to really make an impact since honestly, Tylan Wallace. And so the depth is unique and different. And it's going to make it tough for Zay Flowers to be, you know, a high impact, solo high impact player from like a pure volume perspective.
You don't mean Tylan Wallace, do you? You mean somebody else? Tylan Wallace is the current Ravens wide receiver, punt returner, but you don't mean him. You're talking about somebody else, right?
No, I'm talking – I mean, I can't think of – going back over the prior four seasons, there hasn't been a potential breakout third or fourth wide receiver that I feel like is legitimate in terms of what they might be able to contribute. Tylan Wallace is the last most recent guy and contributing in some ways, but I would say never broke that threshold of kind of what the Ravens thought he might be able to reach. I think Tez Walker represents to some degree an opportunity to be a true – take the top off of a defense, potentially have a role in this offense kind of player.
I think it is fair to look at the Ravens offense and try and figure out why the hell is it so good if they don't have any playmakers. And I think the truth of the matter from my perspective, it is just taking the other side of the coin here for a second. I think the Lamar Henry mesh point is the most powerful weapon in the NFL right now. I don't think there's anything like it. And so it wouldn't, you know, it's kind of like choosing two players and having them be one. I realize that the unfairness of that thing, but I don't think either of the other Burrow plus one combinations are nearly the as weaponized as Henry and Lamar is. I mean, that just affects the whole offense and obviously affects success rates for everybody. And
it's not to say it's not that the Ravens don't have playmakers. It's that they don't have like that game breakers is kind of like the term that I would posit it as. Like, guys that in this moment, I have to get it to this. Like, you know that the ball is going to Ja'Marr Chase in big moments when the Bengals need a big first down, right, kind of thing. And with the Ravens, it could be, honestly, a lot of different players. Zay Flowers, I think, is probably the leader in the clubhouse, which is exciting for a guy that the Ravens can look to if they're not running the ball, obviously. So if we're taking kind of Derrick Henry out of that equation, that's what makes it. I mean, I think also the fact that one of the two players that you mentioned earlier, and both a combination of Lamar, but also it being a running back, is one of the really unique things. I mean, Saquon brings some of that dynamic to what the Eagles have, but I still think that, I mean, I think everybody would take Lamar and Henry over Saquon and Hurts, and you wouldn't lose a minute of sleep over it.
And of course, we had a discussion a lot of times about, you know, how wide receivers want targets, and they often complain about it when they don't get them. In particular, you know, Marquise Brown, the most recent, James Hurst before him, didn't like being guys who were down the depth chart in terms of targets. But this offense rolls through Lamar. So the offense needs to be how to get Lamar into a position to either run or throw. And since he's going to run a significant portion of the time, that takes away opportunity for all other offensive players, in a sense, including targets from your wide receivers. And when he does throw, he might throw it to anybody, extended basis. Everybody's going to work like hell to get there. And I think the best way to take advantage of the fact that Lamar evades pressure for so long is to force defensive backs to huff and puff versus fresh legs. And that's what I really hope the Ravens lean on in terms of just how good and deep this wide receiver room is, the tight end group is, even the running back group is just be shuttling on five new guys every play almost and watch the eyes of the defense roll as that occurs, because they are going to have a lot of trouble keeping up with that.
Yeah, and Lamar throws such a good deep ball. I mean, I agree with you completely that it is. I've always wanted the Ravens to do more to stretch the field. Part of what has always been the way Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are successful is not just. It wasn't just Tyreek Hill earlier in his career. They're always running someone off the top of the defense. They're always making everybody chase them. They're always making you defend at all three levels of the field. And the Ravens can do that dynamically, and they can make you defend. They can force you to defend the first third of the field defensively, and they can still run all their receivers to the second and third levels of the defense and still obligate more defenders because of what Lamar is able to do. And so they should be able to create more space. It's great to see this wide receiver depth of what we're hearing and what they can do with it. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens with kind of Zay Flowers targets. I mean, I think we're already starting to see that evolution where obviously his rookie year was the average depth of his route and targets and what he was doing was very much in the backfield, right? It probably, I don't know what the stats are on that, but
I have it here. 9.1 ADOT in 2023 up to 10.7 in 2024. They reduced his gadget plays, many fewer wide receiver screens. It doesn't mean none. They still need him for misdirection. They want him for orbit motion. They want to get him some passes behind the line of scrimmage, but it's a lot more deep balls. And he's a lot more impactful when that happens. It's kind of like Hamilton closer to the line of scrimmage is more impactful, and Flowers further from the line of scrimmage is more impactful.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that evolution is one that we'll continue to see from Flowers. And I think he's more than willing to and ready.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity, and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, What makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, about takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it, it's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only. Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
To handle that role.
Yeah. Now, some weird stats the last year. I want to go through some of these really quick, but the drop rate improved from the eighth worst of 44 receivers who had at least 50% of the most targets in the league. So it means actually the cutoff point was, I think it was 86 targets. So of the guys who had 86 or more targets, he was 17th worst in 24. He was eighth worst in 23, slightly different 50% rule. I have to say this as an actuary. Honestly, I don't think anybody cares. I just call him the 50% receivers. He was the eighth worst. His catch rate dropped a lot this last year from 71.3 to 63.8. Now, I would expect his catch rate to drop some because you catch close to 100% of the balls that are thrown to you behind the line of scrimmage. Not exactly. You know, it might be 88, it might be 91, might be 84 for some players if they've got some bad hands. But if you look at running backs, they catch the ball pretty much 100% of the time. But he dropped off in year two, but his yards per target and yards per route run both improved. So that's a really unusual combination when you think about that, to have a drop off of that order of magnitude, but that the yards per play was so good. And it's got a couple of things that are contributing to that. The first is he had 18 missed tackles forced, which was eight. And that's a better number than he had last year. I think last year he might've been 13th or 16th or something, but it was a good number even then, but it helped fuel a 6.3 yak per reception number, which is sixth of 44 wide receivers. Now, I want to take you back to Marquise Brown. So Marquise Brown was kind of a fall down king after the catch. And Flowers, I think, appropriately tries to avoid contact, as you mentioned, has a nice comeback U-turn he does. He has other nice things he does, but also they have some routes for him that are more likely to get him open with space in front of him. And that's where a lot of his success has come. And it's a surprising year in a lot of ways because Lamar had a 119.6 quarterback rating, I think, and the passer rating thrown to Flowers is only about 108. So in some ways he got beaten by the spread.
I I think some of that is some of that also. Flowers had what felt like three quarters of ish of a drop a game that were like just like bang your head against the wall. Like, what are you doing? Right? Like crossers, easy throws, wide open off his hands. And so I think that if you ask Flowers, you know, what's one of the things that you would really want to see improvement on from next year? I think saying being more consistent at the catch point with his hands would be pretty high on that list. I can't think of the games or the plays in particular. It wasn't as bad as like the Bateman Cleveland catch that hit him in the head, right? Yeah. That he must have lost that in the sun.
Pointed right up at it.
Yeah, there's no way that there's too little Giants for it to be anything but that. Yeah. But I think that there were just three or four times where it was just like, geez, Flowers, like what happened with this catch? And I think that it's likely that we're going to see, like, that's probably a big area of focus for him in this offseason, is making sure that decline and some of those drops aren't going to happen.
So if you parse those out, he said 7.3% drops last year, and I think 7.3, 7.5, and this year's like 6.3. It explains a portion of the drop in target share. I think it's mostly behind the line of scrimmage versus a ball that's, you know, 10, 15 yards down the field. He's going to be less likely to catch than behind the line of scrimmage. But in any case, I don't think anybody would say that Flowers had a distinctly worse season in 2024 than 23. His aggregate numbers were up. His yards per target up, yards per route run up. I mean, the Ravens relied on him a little bit more even than they did as a rookie, and I think he came through for them. I think if I'm looking at all the Ravens receivers and saying who could be a little bit better in 24 than they were in 25 than in 24, I don't think I'd pick Bateman. I think that Flowers is the guy who could be better because he still underperformed a little bit relative to Lamar's quarterback rating. And I think that, you know, the tight ends were at 143.5. No, that's the last 2 years. They're about 140 this last year. And I want to say Bateman's like 132. That's the right range if it's not correct at all. So Flowers is one of the under guys, along with a couple of the running backs too, that didn't have as good, QB ratings thrown to them. But there's, you know, I'd be hard pressed to say anybody but Zay Flowers if somebody's saying who could be better than they were in 2024, and it wouldn't surprise you.
Yeah, I mean if we're talking strictly about the wide receiver room, I think it has to be. I think likely would be the one other guy that I'd say that could be poised for a really breakout year from like a pass catching perspective. And that's not because there wasn't anything that you wouldn't want to have seen in 2024. But I think what we got from Likely was great. I just think that the ceiling on what could come from Likely potentially is much greater than that. I think Flowers has room for improvement, but I don't know. Other than schematic changes that would lead to a much higher target share, intentional target share for Flowers, I think he is more restrained from a ceiling perspective there as well.
All right. What else do we want to talk about here? He's also a player, by the way, that I wouldn't be shocked if his targets went down this next year. And it's not like his targets are super high, but if they truly go to a shuttling bodies in, he might be in on first down and third down, for example. I think it's possible he might not play as many snaps. He might not get as many targets. He still should be a central focus of any defensive efforts, which probably in and of itself might reduce his targets. But I think you make it harder to game plan against Monken and Lamar when you change your personnel a lot, and particularly the changes that take you from like a 12 or a 13 look to an 11 look. They don't really ever play 10, but an 11 look.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think we'll see more of two tight end sets in this upcoming year and more use of that. I think with Andrews not coming off an injury at the end of the prior year and then the car accident, and we're going to see potentially, it wouldn't surprise me if every single starter, so if you consider Flowers, Bateman, Andrews, Likely, of those four, all of them to have less targets in this upcoming year.
Huh. Okay, and then they'd have to get the ball to DeAndre Hopkins, to Tez Walker. That's possible. That's certainly more targets for Charlie Cole.
Maybe potentially more to Keaton Mitchell, right? Yeah. Just maybe running the ball more. Like, I just the Ravens offense was so good last year and so in sync over pretty much the entire balance of the season that certainly any given player could have less targets amongst those leads. And none of it would be, oh, well, that player wasn't having a good year. It would just be, right. It would just be the variance of what happened in the season.
Yeah. So lots of game script and lots of Lamar being very dominant and then finding, you know, maybe a new formula that's even more effective than what they had before and still allows them to, you know, to roll up as many points in big leads and whatnot.
And the same goes on the running back side, whereas I think that we could see less carries from Hill, Henry, and Lamar than we did last year. I think they're in a very peculiar way, right? Like Lamar, Henry, Hill, Andrews, likely Flowers and Bateman could live in a world where they all have less targets and less carries than last year, and the Ravens offense still be just as dynamic from a point scored perspective, which is, that's the tremendous thing about like the aggregate nature of the Ravens playmakers, is that they are going to find they are going to find the third and fourth targeted weakness matchups in these games. And whether that, you know, or even fifth or sixth, because if you include Lamar and using that in the running game on the option, like you were talking about, they're going to be able to be attacking the fourth strongest area of any team on any given play intentionally, consistently. And that's what makes them so scared.
Yeah, it is very exciting. I have trouble projecting the same level of quality for the offensive raw because they were so good last year. They have been that good before in the Lamar era. That was good. They were actually a little bit better in 2019 than they were in 24. But I have a hard time projecting it again because I don't think that they can expect the same level of offensive line continuity. They had the best in the league last year. And that was a hidden strength of the Ravens. I mean, a really hidden strength that they basically, even though the linemen in a lot of ways were not perfect, and everybody from left guard over basically had some flaws. Well, really, even Ronnie, too. All five of them had flaws. I mean, the fact that they ran them out together pretty much for the entire season was a real positive for the Ravens. It helped. And a lot of people, you know, give all the credit to Lamar, but the fact that line had significant continuity actually really helped the team.
Yeah. No, I mean, and also the opposite of that, which is like you were saying, minus the continuity, you could see significant leaps in quality of play from potentially three different spots on the line next year. That at left guard, at right guard, you know, Falele being more consistent and like he was not good the first quarter of the year last year. And really did turn it around in that regard. Rosengarten, I think, got better and better as the year went on. There's a real opportunity that he could really elevate his play again this upcoming year. So you have an opportunity where maybe you're going to trade some of the continuity and see an injury at one of the guard positions, maybe see Linderbaum, you know, wherever that injury might end up happening, but then still see big jumps in quality of play from a couple of these players.
Yeah, I honestly think center over to the right, I think you could see improvement at all three of those positions. At left guard, I'd be a little more cautious to predict it because there'll be a new player. And at left tackle, I'd be very nervous to predict it because even though there is room for Ronnie to get better, he's also older and it's probably...
Ronnie is probably the least likely if we had to pick a player that was going to improve, but you could blind test that to age and that would be, you would come up with the same result where the rest of these guys are all going to be 26 or younger, essentially, you know, in terms of what the Ravens are going to be looking at on the offensive line.
All right. What else to say about Zay Flowers here while we get back to this? We already talked about that. I do trust Monken to make use of his speed as much or more than in 2024. I think he's kind of experimented both ways. I think they'd say that some metrics were down a little bit, in large part his aggregate amount of production was a lot higher in 2024. I think they stick with that usage and they find other guys, and particularly since Monken is being handed these guys. I mean, before it was Justice Hill, but you had to take him out or you had to use him as a pony or, you know, you had to do something special to get Justice Hill in there. And it's not like they didn't have some other players. Deontay Hardy was in theory available last year at some point. to play. Lajonte Wester almost certainly will be there for the whole season, and they're going to find some way to use him offensively. I'm convinced of it. Keaton Mitchell, they will find some way. He probably can't get in there as much as he was in 23 at running back, which means he's going to have to be a pony, a flanker, a gadget guy, whatever you want to call that, to get a substantial portion of his snaps. I think the Ravens just they're overwhelmed with weapons such that they won't misuse Flowers like they were in, like, well, okay, misuse. They won't use Flowers like the way they did in 23.
I'm one of the things that I would love to see the Ravens do, and I think a lot of Ravens fans have wanted this for a long time, but to see the Ravens get to the line of scrimmage faster, to use sugar huddles. Like, I'm interested to see how the Ravens use their depth to almost do what we've seen from some offensive linemen, or we saw with the inside linebacker positions, where it's like, okay, it's going to be the A team, and maybe, or, you know, not A as in better, right? But this is going to be the A team that's going out first, and we're going to no huddle, and these guys are going to be running up and down the field, right? And we're going to go with it, and then we're going to come out on the next series, and you're going to see an entirely different personnel, an entirely different group of people, and they're going to be kind of running left to right.
The next series or the next play?
The next series, right? So, like, being able to use the no huddle, like, trying to keep defenders on the field, getting them worn out, right? Isolating all of what that is. I think everybody in Ravens fandom thinks that that's the only thing that's left on the table, really, for Lamar, is to fully hand him the keys to some of these offenses and let him do a little bit more, even between plays on the field.
I think the Ravens really, to be all fairness to Monka, they did a great job with that last year. They got the line of scrimmage quick, and Lamar made tremendous pre-snap and post-snap reads. But he did a lot of, remember, walking around and surveying the field, and that was only possible because they got to the line of scrimmage quickly. Harbaugh made a comment about that in rookie minicamp. He said, you know, these are non-competitive plays. This is just a rehearsal for practice. Okay, so it's you don't want to see contact, but he did want to see two things. And the first was the people got to the line of scrimmage quickly, and they knew their spot, and they immediately got to it. The second one was that they got off the snap quickly. And that doesn't mean compete on the play. It doesn't mean hit the guy opposite you guys, but it means, you know, show what you can in terms of get off and whatnot. And we can then evaluate that. I think there is a high level of focus on that this year, and you can't have guys first of all, I don't even think you can run practice efficiently if you can't get to the line of scrimmage quickly. It's just, I mean, you want to run more plays per practice, get to the line of scrimmage quickly. It's just, you know, I actually think the Ravens, that's an area where I'd be hard pressed to say that's going to be a lot better in 25 than in 24, because I think it was very good in 24. I think Lamar needs to bring something different to the game that we haven't seen yet. It might be on schedule throwing, you know, like, more slant passes that he can take a three-step drop and RPO. Throw it, and something, make use of Bateman in that way, you know, make use of Hopkins in that way. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I would. The only variance to that would be that I would love to see them do it without subbing. I don't know that the Ravens will ever get away from that, because the Ravens love to sub on every single package and every single part of the team. And obviously, there are health implications to that, but there are a lot of teams that play their players for much longer parts of games and don't see significant injuries. Yeah. I don't know if there's true science behind that. The Ravens are a rotational team, though, so it is what it is. But I would love to see them wear out some of these defenders by not letting them get off the field.
And that's very possible with if you sub, you definitely allow new pass rushers in the game. So that's a problem right there. But if you sub, most teams don't have any sort of depth in the secondary to put in fresh legs on defense. I mean, those are not rotational positions. You look at every cornerback in the league, they generally either play all the snaps or pretty close to it if they're starters, and they play almost none if they're not starters, or they come in only in case of injury where they play a long series of plays. So, it's a pick your poison kind of thing. I think the Ravens have so many weapons offensively, and Lamar by himself is able to evade pressure for so much longer that you might be able to make more progress, more with a fresh legs offense. This is the first time I've really ever advocated for this, by the way, with the Ravens. They've never had the kind of depth of offensive weapons in the past that they would they would be at this point. This is a very special football team from that regard. And the funny thing is, it wouldn't be funny, but it could turn around so quickly in camp with two injuries. It could turn around so quickly during the season where all of a sudden you don't have depth at cornerback very quickly kind of thing. It is the nature of football. All right. What's a good season look like for Zay Flowers?
So I think a good season for Zay Flowers is something like, I would say 100 plus targets overall for him, 65 plus catches, right around that 1,000 yard marker. And the same, right? Three or four touchdowns overall for Flowers. So the Ravens are not a reliant team on using Flowers for touchdowns. And so to me, just one of those solid stat lines where I would like it, you know, again, 65 catches for 1,000 yards and four touchdowns is going to be very, that might even in the setting of what the Ravens are, cusp into a potentially great season for Flowers, because that's still pretty close to his ceiling potentially with the number of targets and how the Ravens are going to have to spread the ball around.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that would be an awfully good season. For me, a good season is this, that he's healthy for 14 plus games, essentially repeats his key metrics. That's yards per route run at 2.25, which was 13th in the league. I think that'd be very good if he repeated that. And his yards per target of 9.1, which was up significantly from the previous year, with a similar passer rating when targeted. So I'm just saying 108. So Lamar presumably is going to be around that, possibly higher in a good season, possibly lower if his season is not as good. But if Flowers essentially is right on par with where Lamar is in terms of passer rating, I think that's a good year. Remains one of the wide receivers. This is key. The other teams must game plan for in a stacked offense. So if the other opposing defensive coordinator is forced to account for Zay Flowers with two players, which that's what you really want, then I think you're going to get all the great matchups you want, even though Flowers isn't getting the targets. We saw Andrews get covered up by the Chiefs in that first game. I think, you know, it could be that Flowers is a guy that opposing defenses try and take away. And when they do, Lamar should be able to burn them for it regularly by hitting other players. And I think the probably one of the best indications would be the Ravens pick up the year five option after 2025. They'll have another year to evaluate him if they do that, and they'll be able to get the contract done prior to the contract done prior to 27 if they pick up the 2026 year five option.
I think that Zay Flowers could have a below average season and the Ravens will still pick up the year five. I think, you know, and knock on wood, we don't want to see anybody get hurt, but I think we could see a situation where Zay Flowers doesn't play a single snap in 2025 and they still sign him to the year five option. Some of that is the Ravens cap situation too.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of money for the Ravens to toss out there on Flowers for a year five number if he's coming off an injury. I wouldn't want to see him go, but that's just an awful situation to have to contemplate. So hopefully not. How about a great season?
I mean, it's going to be a big number, but the cap is right. Like, can you believe this? Cap's not real.
Jordan is a non-believer. There's Holocaust non-believers.
I mean, you can't let players of Zay Flowers caliber, you know, just walk away. Ultimately, you're picking up that option to trade him, even at bare minimum, if you feel like you can't squeeze the cap numbers to work with what you need. But the Ravens have always been this way. They let good but not great players walk, but all the great players always stay. They find a way to bring them in. And I think I do think that Zay Flowers is one of those guys, and will have some longevity with Lamar and this team.
It certainly would be very exciting if he could get his second contract here in Baltimore. It's there are so many to be done now over the next couple of years. And you wonder, you know, how are they going to possibly get this done?
I think the better way to ask the question is, will he play under his year five option or not? I think that's almost ultimately really the bigger question, right? Like, are you in a position where, you activate the option, but in reality, that's just the springboard to whatever the extension conversation is. And in reality, he's never actually going to play on that year with that number.
Yeah. I get in so much trouble whenever I talk about trading Isaiah Likely, even though I have no desire to trade Isaiah Likely. I just hate the fact that all these tight end contracts are stacked up the way they are. But it's possible they'll end up trading Zay Flowers, and it really could happen. It could happen before year four, or it could happen before year five. He'd have a ton of trade value if you trade him before year four with a fifth year option available. And he'd have much less trade value if you trade him when he's about to play on the fifth year option, which is
right.
Essentially at what, 80% of market value or 85% of market value would be, you know, it'd be a big number. He'd have to have a good 2025 to get some other team excited about paying him the 2026 money he'll be due.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. It's 2027 is actually the year.
Will
right?
be his fifth. Right. Yeah. Fifth will year. Be his fifth year. Right. So, yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, a great season. What did you say about that for
his I mean, season? So I think a great season is one where we see Zay Flowers be the lead option and the lead receiver for the Ravens. And again, this is one of those weird ones where it's like, what is good for Zay Flowers might be bad for the Ravens. So that is a injury to somebody like Rashad Bateman or Derrick Henry early in camp. And so seeing somebody that would either be taking like his or Andrews or likely, again, this, there's so many guys that it's almost, it would have to be borderline catastrophic for us to get in the territory for Zay Flowers to have a great season, because you would need to see multiple of these other playmakers where the Ravens spread the ball around to getting hurt. And I think there's no world where Zay Flowers has a great season that Lamar is not part of that equation. So it really is, you know, a combination of a couple other playmakers going down. And then it's just a volume game, right? It's where we see Zay Flowers being the main option for whatever reason it has to be as a receiver. We're talking about 150 probably targets, 100 catches, 1,400 plus yards. Again, I don't see the Ravens, you know, and they're not super reliant on their wide receivers for touchdowns. But I think if we did see seven or more touchdowns from Zay Flowers, that would be a great season for him as well. For there would be an added dynamic of that route running. I think we talked a little bit earlier about him not being a super elite route runner. I think that would signify that he's added something to his game and been able to create. Rashad Bateman is so good at creating his own space with how he breaks off his routes, and some of his route running is really crafty. We don't see that from Flowers. So if we saw that elevation, I think those things would take him into kind of like the great space. I think it also has to be a 17 plus game season for him to be great. That it's, we're going to have, even with all of that, the volume, that you have to see the durability follow suit on it, or the ding that comes with that of him being a smaller player kind of will hang over whatever number totals might exist. Even if he does play 14 games, I still think that to get to great, it's one of those ones where he's got to play and be healthy the whole year through.
So 15 plus two would be enough, or he needs to play 17 during the regular season.
I mean, available for 17 in the regular season. Let's say, if we're in the case where we're in week 16 or 17 and weeks 18, and we don't, like, starters need to be rested. I mean, it was unfortunate that he got hurt last year when it felt like the Ravens should have been in a better position to not have their starters in that game altogether.
Okay. All right. I'll just read you my great season. Takes a step forward with return to health and 16 plus games plus all playoffs. I think it's the plus all playoffs that I got to have him for. If he misses a game during the regular season, I'm okay. Used primarily as a threat on deep overs, which maximizes his ability to separate and run away from trailing DBs. Constantly demands safety help to create opportunity for other receivers. Thrives as fresh legs with rotational usage. Quality of play is such that he is high on the list of players the Ravens attempt to extend after 2025. So first opportunity to extend him is after 2025. He can't be extended before that, by the way, for those of you who might be thinking, why don't you just extend him now? Well, you have to play 3 years before you could be extended. It is a possibility the Ravens could extend him hyper early. They didn't need to do that. The key player that they don't need to do that for right now is Hamilton, who has a fifth-year option that's going to have to be played out. But with Linderbaum, they have to do it right now because they don't want to pay the fifth-year option. And you might get into a situation with a subpar or injury-riddled 24 that you might not want to pick up the option on Flowers after 25. You might not want to pick up and it'd be the 2027 option you'd be locking yourself into. So it's I think a great season. I'm not, by the way, you won't notice anything about specifically about yardage in there. It's the quality of the Ravens offense that really has to be good there. And it's the fact that the Ravens want to extend him. That is the key fact. It's the Ravens will be good judges of what he's contributing to this offense. And I don't think it has to, I don't really think it has to have any specific statistical need. Although if you fell off in all statistics, I'd probably say that's not good enough.
Well, I think that's the interesting question for Flowers, which is that when you get to the end of year three, can you find a deal that works for both sides? Knowing that Zay Flowers is probably not going to get, you know, top 10 wide receiver money on this, in this market. He's not built like that. He's not an X. He won't have the numbers and he won't have the buzz behind it in a way that he's going to be needed for something like that. He seems like he really likes it here in Baltimore. He seems to really like playing with Lamar. You know, are those things that can be put into play here where it's like, look, we want to keep this band together. We need you to be able to be coming in at a certain level here so we can make sure that Linderbaum stays and that Hamilton stays and that, you know, where these other areas of what our needs are, do they fit in? And so I think that's really the big question for him. For a guy that is, let's call him the 15th to 20th best wide receiver in the NFL. Like if he's in that range, there are teams that will overpay for those kind of guys. And you're going to have to go to probably a bad team. It's not going to be at nearly as close to a Super Bowl as the Ravens are to be able to do that. And can the Ravens leverage that versus the money that he could be making in that instance to keep him in Baltimore?
Well, the beautiful thing for the Ravens about that is that they have advantages with players who are leaving and players who are coming in terms of nobody wants to play with a really crappy team. There's a whole bunch of receivers who want to play with Lamar Jackson, a whole bunch of players who really want to play with Lamar Jackson, period. And a whole bunch of receivers who probably realize it's maybe not ideal for my career, but I could go there and I can play and maybe I could have a good year, maybe, you know, whatever it might be. Or guys like DeAndre Hopkins, at the end of the career,
perfect
the money should not matter. I mean, to a player like that. I wish they could have leaned on that with Odell Beckham and not ended up paying him as much as they did because they flushed that money, a lot of it, down the toilet. It's not like he was even terrible. I mean, he was okay on a per target basis. He was just not worth $18 million and they knew it up front.
And there was no, that was, the Ravens very rarely misplay free agency.
Right.
And that was one of them where I do not think that, I think that they could have waited four more weeks on that signing and had him for half as much. And I don't think that the competition was there.
Right. And they might have even just, if they'd have just led him on with three or four texts, a couple of phone calls, some substance to it. Lamar calls him once, maybe as a free agent. I think you wait till after the draft and sign him. I don't even think
it could have been the inverse though, where Lamar was saying, hey, we got to get this done.
Could be that.
It almost seems like that was what was happening. Given kind of how badly it ultimately played out. But hopefully in those instances, if you're looking, like you're thinking about it from Lamar's perspective, you learned a lesson too. And I would rather have done it in that era and that time period and that salary cap situation for the team than being in a situation 3 years from now and Lamar making a similar type of demand.
It's sadly, we're still in that same cap era because that Odell Beckham contract just is a gift that keeps on giving. It's still counting against the cap this year. So
the difference being with Flowers, with Hamilton, with Linderbaum, like the dynamic change of what is going to happen to the Ravens salary cap 3 years from now is going to look really different overall from allocations and from a bunch of different ways, all in positive ways. All those are guys that I want to see on this team long-term. It's just going to, the makeup is going to be very different.
Yeah. All right. Jordan, always a pleasure talking football with you. Great discussion on this. I hope people appreciate Jordan when he's on this show and how much he gives. He doesn't really hang out on Twitter the same way. You've been talking to me a little bit about needing a different social media platform.
So yeah, I'm a free agent. Yeah. If anybody's got ideas about where to go.
Where should people, can people send you an email or anything if they want to talk?
Yeah, football? People can catch me on email. It's jkough1@gmail.com. I'm also on Instagram, but I don't check that either. Social media is just, I've been a phased out thing for me because it's just too much these days.
All right. Well, lots of people are kind of jealous of you. It's, you know, social media certainly can be a time waste and some other things, but there's a whole lot more crap to sift through now than there ever was before. That's for sure. All right. Other folks out there, thank you for all the listens. We've been watching and seeing the fairly significant uptick. Really appreciate that. Please do anything you can to promote the show. Like and subscribe if you're watching out there on YouTube. We really appreciate that. And tell somebody new about this show. Somebody you think might appreciate this content. In particular, if you can show them once how to find this podcast, whether that means finding it on a podcast platform, helping them set that up on their phone, or just showing how to get to it on the internet and click play on it there. Lots of different ways to watch it. Jordan, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it, it's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply. Available in app only.